Welcome to Talking Giants Player Profiles and Projections. I'm Bobby Skinner with Justin Penick, and today we have Andrew Thomas, the fourth overall pick in the 2020 NFL Draft. Pick number one of the Joe Judge era was Andrew Thomas out of Georgia. He's 6'5", 315 years old, 22, or three, he's not 315 years old, he's 315 pounds, 22 years old. I was so eager to get to his age because, you know what, me and Andrew Thomas share the same birthday, Justin.
Oh, fun fact. How old is he?
He's 22. So, but
22. I am older than Andrew Thomas.
Both born on January 22nd. He's just a kid.
I'm just a kid.
For 2020, the plan for Andrew Thomas was to start him at right tackle, which we vehemently disagreed with, and we could talk about later why we, you know, I'm glad that he ended up playing left tackle. But Solder opted out, so that changed that for good. Andrew Thomas is playing left tackle. And honestly, he started out good. Pittsburgh week one, we were thrilled. He handled Bud Dupree that whole game when he was matched up. Now, people, Bud Dupree had backside pressure, but it wasn't Andrew Thomas' fault. It was Scheme's fault. He wasn't missing blocks. And then it seemed to get progressively worse from that point on. Week two versus Chicago, gives up a sack. It's for a fumble. Chicago scores on that drive. San Fran, there's not a bad play you remember, but he played actually worse than he did the Chicago game, where the Chicago game was kind of just one, maybe two bad plays. A bad first half versus the Rams, but got better in that game. And then Dallas, a sack on a play-action pass, fumble, return for a touchdown. Without that bad Andrew Thomas play, the Giants win that game. Then he gets suspended for the first quarter of the Washington game in week six because he's late to a meeting. And Parrott plays well. So, I mean, the heat is on Andrew Thomas. Like, he hasn't been playing well. He gets suspended, and then Matt Parrott comes in and plays well in that game. And then the following Thursday, on Thursday Night Football, he gets up two very bad sacks. And honestly, he should have given up three, but Daniel Jones did an amazing job getting out of it and getting the ball out to Wayne Gallman. I mean, really bad. I mean, people were writing articles, stories, coaches, you know, Paul Alexander was explaining. It was really bad for Andrew Thomas. And the fact that his rookie compadres were playing well at the time. But then it turned around. It turned around. And it just happened to turn around when Joe Judge supposedly started taking more of a role with the offensive line. Week 8 versus Tampa, they changed his inside foot. They changed his inside foot, and we'll get into his technique and everything. And he played well from there on out. Now, the Arizona game wasn't good. The fourth quarter, he gave a couple sacks, but a lot of that was, you know, the right side missing their stunts and a lame duck Daniel Jones not being able to move. But he was good the rest of the season. Not perfect, but good. Justin, I'm very encouraged by the way his rookie season went. Okay, I'm not going to be mad at a guy for playing bad in the first half and good in the second half as a rookie. That's what happens with rookies. Andrew Thomas was my guy. I banged on the table for him. And he still is my guy, and I'm really excited and confident going into year two for Andrew Thomas.
Yeah, Bobby, he was our guy. You know, more particularly, he was your guy, you know, heading into last year's draft. You know, we celebrated like crazy when we picked him. And the recovery towards the second half of the year, I mean, I remember on some recap episodes that we had to finish last year, seeing that progression, and particularly even just seeing him the second time against Dallas, after kind of struggling the first time against Dallas, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence and some of the edge rushers, some of the pass rushers that they have. Seeing him that second time have a really, really good game was an awesome feeling, you know, along with winning that football game and trying to give ourselves a chance at getting into the postseason. But Andrew Thomas putting a really good stamp on the 2020 season was really, really good. So I know we're not a fan of PFF pressures. I'm not a fan of them. They really do overestimate. But I just want to put
sacks.
Sacks, yes, but I want to just make this point to prove a point about Andrew Thomas's season. So Andrew Thomas, PFF measured that he allowed 57 total pressures from the 2020 season. However, Bobby, 18 of those 57 pressures came from two games, the first Cowboy game and then the Cardinal game. 18 divided by 57, it's about one third. So he gave one third of his pressures up in two games, and he basically played every game except he missed the first quarter. And that's even something that I really commend him for as well. You know, while we praise and we love, you know, Mekhi Becton and seeing the good things that he's doing with the Jets, missed a lot of time last year, and your best ability is availability, especially as a left tackle, the second most valuable position in the game of football. And he even had a foot injury last year. He played through that foot injury, and he improved throughout the year on that foot injury as well. So had some bad games. Really, in terms of a goal for next year, I kind of want to ask you about where are you kind of projecting Andrew Thomas this year? You know, PPPs, player profile projections. Where are you projecting Andrew Thomas to be this year? But really, at least for me, you have to avoid the disaster game. You have to.
Yeah, that's the thing, is we can't have... Now, it's year two. We can't have horrible games. There can be, you know, a game where he's not, you know, not at his best. Like, he's not gonna go this season without giving up zero sacks. You know what I mean? But especially with offensive linemen, how you start really does set the tone for your season and how you are portrayed, really. I mean, think of, like I said, one of his curses was his rookie compadres. Well, now, I didn't watch Tristan Wirfs, but everyone said he was just solid all year. So, he is the outlier. Andrew Thomas, I say very confidently, because I watched every single snap of all these guys, basically twice. Andrew Thomas was better than Jedrick Wills, and he was better as a run blocker than him all year. As a pass blocker, he was better than him by the end of the year. And then Mekhi Becton, their pass blocking, I think, was around the same. Like, you know, Becton gave up some sacks, had a 2-sack game against Myles Garrett the week after Andrew Thomas handled him, by the way. But Becton wasn't moving guys the same way he was at the start of the season. Now, I'm sure injury had something to do with that, and you know, I love watching Becton play, so I hope he stays healthy. But, like, and Pat Flaherty, who's now an offensive line analyst with the Giants, you know, he made a video when they hired him. I went and found it, and he said the same things, you know. He's like, Becton wasn't really moving guys like he was at the beginning of the year, at the end of the year, and he had some, you know, gimmicks in the past. Like, so him and Thomas, like, by the end of the year, if you just looked at their last 8 games and erased that Andrew Thomas had a bad first 8, and Becton the first half of the season when he was healthy was awesome, you'd say, like, they're right about the same. And then, obviously, everyone says Wirfs is better. I didn't watch Wirfs like that. So he got kind of screwed by that, you know? Whereas, like, at the end of the year, Andrew Thomas was better, flat out better than Jedrick Wills. And even people who like to use, like, PFF and stuff, Andrew, like, says that. But because Wills started better than Thomas, like, there's this narrative around Thomas that there isn't around Wills.
I think the Seattle game, would you say the Seattle game was his best game last year?
Either that or Cincy. But both games were, like, kind of flawless, those two.
Yeah.
Granted, those weren't the best pass rushers, but Carl Lawson's a pretty good pass rusher.
Yeah. It just went to the Jets, ironically. So only 2 holding penalties last year, too. Find that to be kind of important.
One
then they
was
came
bogus.
And backed.
It took away that
they came
Eagles
in,
touchdown.
One of them was bogus. Yeah.
Remember the Eagles touchdown
that's right.
That got taken off? That was
yes.
Such a bogus call.
Yeah, they came in back-to-back weeks against Washington, and then on that Daniel, I think it would have been a Daniel Jones rushing touchdown,
yes,
right?
Yes.
There's so we, you know, we compared him to also the rookie tackles last year. And, you know, recently, you know, there's been some Giants people that have done some side-by-side comparisons, a few different people that have done comparisons of there's a decent track record of highly touted offensive tackles getting off to a poor start their rookie year and then rebounding well and becoming one of the league's best. Now, it's not a slam dunk. I mean, you could either turn out like Ereck Flowers, who was hurt his rookie year, played through an injury, and just continued to go down. Or hopefully you can be like Trent Williams, who had a subpar rookie year and then became one of the league's best left
Tyron
tackles.
Tyron Smith, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I remember Jason Garrett referencing Tyron Smith. He's like, he struggled really, and he kind of got better and better. And that's the thing, is Andrew Thomas got a lot better as the season went along. You know, if he didn't, it'd be like, all right, there's hope. He was a rookie. But you don't feel as, like, right now I feel confident in Andrew Thomas, where after week 8, I was like, I wasn't, like, you know, throwing the towel in. I mean, that would be silly to do with a rookie. But you are worried, you know, like, oh, my God, this is a rough start. And it was getting worse every single week. Let's talk about his game, though. If I can get nerdy and talk about what his game is.
Yeah.
In the run game, he's a mauler. Like, he moves dudes. Like, if we haven't seen a Giants offensive lineman move dudes like the way Andrew Thomas moves him. Him and Shane Lemieux, or even Will Hernandez working double teams, was beautiful. I mean, they would just clear dudes out. It was beautiful to see. And that's because he has the athleticism and strength to hang with anybody in the NFL. Like, he has the speed to go with every pass rusher. He has the strength to go with every pass rusher. And he's got the speed and strength to get off the ball quick and move dudes in the run game. And that's why I loved him so much out of the draft. Is he had, like, the things he needed to get better at were the things you improve on. And what were those? he would overset, and his inside foot would fall back. Now, it's hard to explain without actually showing the video, but, you know, it's called his post foot. It would fall back, and it would give an inside lane for pass rushers, and that is what he corrected midseason. He started lagging that foot, and this is his words, and it's something I talked about a lot in the O-line reports. He would lag that foot to shut down the inside moves, and he realized, I think once he did it one game versus Tampa and Jason Pierre-Paul, who had an awesome year, he realized, oh, I'm athletic enough for the NFL. I've got this. I can trust my athleticism to get these guys around the edge. So now that he's got, like, his feet were the biggest thing he needed corrected, and he's, like, they're not perfect right now, but they've got a lot better. And even in that Arizona game, like the worst play was actually Golden, where Golden baited him into it. And he had never seen that, where Golden had baited him as like, hey, I'm going to go inside, out, and then back in. Like, he kind of had seen how Thomas had been winning, and he baited it into him. And Golden's a good pass rusher because of stuff like that. So he got better at that. Now, things that he didn't get a ton better at his rookie season, but he did get a little better, is his hands. He was lunging like crazy, like at the start of the season. He was leaning forward, and he was getting off balance and was, you know, allowing pass rushers to take advantage of him. He got better at that at the end of the year, but it still needs work. But that's something that does get better. Was he
still doing the symbols?
Yeah.
Instead of efficiently punching out straight and going at the breastplates, where he's going from the outside and he's clamping?
Yeah. And so he still needs to get better at that. But what I like is that they fix his feet. And I think Mark Colombo was trying to fix his hands before he fixed his feet. And I do think that was one of the big arguments that him and Judge had. Because when all the blue check marks were like, well, what could Joe Judge actually tell Thomas that Mark Colombo wasn't already telling him? Well, they were literally fighting in practices. And one of those things was something that, you know, Paul Alexander, who's, you know, an offensive line coach for a long time and was quoted on it, was like, they had him doing all this different stuff with his hands, like machine guns hands and punching and reloading, punching and reloading, you know, trying to swat with one hand and punch with the other, which is some good things, but they needed to fix his feet first. And once his feet got better, everything else got better for Andrew. Good run blocker all year long, though.
Let me ask you a final question before we wrap up here. Andrew Thomas is your guy. I want to hear what you have to say. So basically, what's the expectation for Andrew Thomas this year? You know, is it to perform the way that he did the second half of the season? And if he performs the way that he did the second half of the season for pretty much maybe consistently, you know, maybe has a bad game here or there. Everybody's going to have a bad game, right? But if we look at Andrew Thomas's 2021 season and it's like, okay, he performed kind of the same way that he did the second half of his rookie year, or is there an expectation that he gets better, avoid the disaster game? What is your expectation for him, Bobby?
You know, if he does that all year, which would mean he gave up like three, four sacks if he plays the way he played in the second half, and still with some pressures, you're not thrilled, but you're all right with it. But my expectation for him is, and maybe this is, you know, he's still young, still needs to grow and get better, be the best tackle we've had in this blue jersey in a long time. You know, like be that dude that you're capable of being, and, you know, have the national media be like, oh man, Thomas struggled, but he's right there with all these other young tackles. And he needs to be a good left tackle in the NFL. Like, he is, like, you like feel great. Like, man, we got our left tackle for the next 8 to 10 years right now. Like, if Daniel Jones works out, like, that should be, like, the hope by the end of the year. Like, those two guys are here to work with each other for the next 10 years.
Yeah. I'm excited for him in the run game, too. I know I don't want to go too long. I don't want to dig another rabbit hole, but just, you know, my overall thoughts. I'm excited to see him in the run game. Saquon Barkley has notoriously been known for rushing better to the right side compared to the left side, so I'm interested to see if those numbers go up this year with Lemieux and Andrew Thomas kind of working together on that left side. You know, you get a pulling Will Hernandez, too, whenever runs go to the left side, too. Kyle Rudolph coming in, so all of these kind of other pieces that the Giants have added, slash there's going to be the continuity there, but at least on the left side of the offensive line, that should hopefully help Andrew Thomas, especially in how he communicates with Shane Lemieux, et cetera. So excited for Andrew Thomas. Needs to be good, Bobby. You know, he was the number four pick in the NFL draft. You know, high, very high
awesome
draft pick.
He needs to be an
he
awesome
was the
tackle.
first He was the first tackle taken off the board on a very stacked tackle class. So let's see it. Rooting for him. He's also a good dude too. I mean, you know, I hate to, you know, do the automatic comparison to Ereck Flowers, but why you kind of believe in Andrew Thomas is definitely a lot more than a guy like Ereck Flowers, because Andrew Thomas works hard. We've talked with his trainer last year. You know, Bobby, you know, maybe you talk to him every once in a while.
He's a humble, hardworking football player, where Ereck Flowers was an arrogant, lazy asshole.
There you go.
And let's bring up the ankle real quick, because I know people definitely better that he's not dealing with an ankle, but the ankle wasn't the reason for his struggles early in the year. I won't give him that, oh, all of his issues were because of the ankle. Certainly didn't help, but it weren't because of that. All right. See you on the next one.
Come on, pay attention in there. Let's go. We got a beautiful day. Work. Play fast. Play fast. Whoa.
Tay Crowder, 6'3", 235 pounds, 24 years old, was the 2020 Mr. Irrelevant, the last pick in the draft, a former running back at Georgia who only played linebacker for 2 years before entering the NFL. And basically 8 games played, he had 57 tackles, 3 for a loss, 1 sack, 3 QB hits, and even a game-winning fumble recovery versus Washington in Week 6 to give the Giants their first victory. Averaged 6.5 tackles per game. Man, I was perplexed when Tay Crowder was drafted so late. You know, like, I remember a conversation us having after the 2020 draft. Like, well, one, why was he drafted this late? And it's like, why did the Giants even draft like a guy like TJ Brunson ahead of him? I was like, I feel like he's clearly better than TJ Brunson. And, you know, we have the proof. It's like, man, if this guy was picked in the third round, I would have been okay with it. Like, I really like this guy. And he came in and had, you know, more rookie production for Mr. Irrelevant than probably anybody ever, unless they were a kicker.
I feel like sometimes I'm talking about you and I. I think everybody else remembers Tay Crowder as Mr. Irrelevant, because every time we make a post about him, somebody will reply Mr. Irrelevant. So it's like, yes, I think everybody knows, and we all know it by now. But sometimes in our evaluation, let's just say, of Tay Crowder, we forget that he's Mr. Irrelevant, and you're not supposed to find somebody who plays a significant amount of time on your defense. You know, when he was out there and when he was starting, you know, getting basically over 50, 60% of the snaps, that was like his least snap share sometimes in a game, which he was healthy when he was out there and kind of fully established. So the fact that we got anything out of him, and the fact that we got anything out of that spot, and, you know, Tay Crowder has an awesome story as well, kind of an underdog story. So excited to see what he can do this year. And he had for where he was drafted, an awesome 2020.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I remember, you know, we are at least, you know, I was pretty upset when they cut Ryan Conley. But part of me on that cut, they was like, well, I'm excited Tay Crowder's here. And if they had to make the decision between Crowder and Conley, I would have been okay with it. But Downs came in, and he kind of, the Giants weren't playing 2 inside linebackers to start the season. And then San Fran, the offense they run, they were forced to play 2 inside linebackers. I remember making Devontae Downs my Giant factor. It's like, dude, you're going to have to show up this game. And he didn't. He played horribly. Because NFL teams are just very slow to play rookies, especially late-round rookies, Downs plays starts the next week versus the Rams. After 4 snaps, he misses a tackle, and they yank him. Tay Crowder comes in the game, and it's Tay Crowder's job, as long as he's healthy. The rest of the year had a little IR stint after his Washington touchdown. And I thought he played well, especially for what the expectations were. Like, he came in, he plays fast, he plays aggressive, which works perfectly when you have a linebacker like Blake Martinez and those 3 big D linemen of, you know, Dexter, Leo, and Dalvin at the time. And I thought he played well. Like, he's got good instincts and coverage. Not perfect, but, like, I really liked him in that role. And, you know, we talked about it on the Camp Battles episode yesterday. He's the guy I want to win inside linebacker too. And the thing is he's young at the position. He only played this is his 4th year playing linebacker. Like that's kind of like guys switch from high school to college and they, you know, they play a new position. That's the storyline for them. He was a running back at Georgia for the first 2 years and then switched to linebacker. So it's like he's got athletic traits that you want for the linebacker spot. He's got the size. He could probably beef up a little bit. But now it's like, you know, get another year better at a position that, you know, you need to learn a little bit.
I love his range, too. I mean, we loved his range coming out of Georgia. I mean, the speed, the athleticism, the quickness, I think it leads to you having really good range. But, Bobby, you know, the difference between him and Ryan Conley, you know, I feel like we broke down Ryan Conley to no end last year, especially coming off that rookie year. But the difference between him and Ryan Conley is Ryan Conley just played like a bat out of hell. He played like a bat out of hell. He's going to run to a gap, and he may even get washed out. Tay Crowder, you know, I find what's most impressive about Tay Crowder, along with just being productive from that Mr. Relevant spot, but he doesn't get washed out. He does have that range. He does have that quickness, that athleticism. He can go sideline to sideline. You know, I feel that Cleveland Browns game where they run that outside zone scheme, I thought that was one of his best games of the season. He had some low moments. He had some bad games. I think Baltimore was a pretty bad game in coverage, and he had maybe some missed tackles. But that Cleveland game where it's outside zone, he's going sideline to sideline. I thought that was one of his best games, but also he does not get stuck behind defensive linemen, offensive linemen. He's patient. He baits the running back to go certain places, which I love that. Saw that against the Cowboys and Tony Pollard, kind of sitting behind a defensive lineman, not getting washed out, not getting stuck. But then, boom, once a running back goes one way, he pops out. He makes a play on the ball carrier. So, really, you know, Tay Crowder, the instincts are there. The patience was there, not getting washed out. But also, he has the athleticism, the quickness, and the range that you want out of your interior linebacker to assist Blake Martinez.
Yeah, and you know, he's not, like, destroying blocks from offensive linemen. Like, if he's going to win that, it's because he's using his speed and slipping by him. But when he does get blocked by an offensive lineman, like you said, he doesn't get washed away. He'll hold his own. He's not really going to destroy a ton of blocks once they're engaged. But he holds his own. He does a good job with angles of not letting O-lineman get that initial win at the time. You know, they use him as a blitzer. I don't think he really has any pass rush moves, but he's got, you know, good speed and burst. So, you know, he can add some, you know, to his hand usage, which a lot of inside linebackers struggle with. Where he did struggle, though, was he missed some tackles. Like, he had a 16.1% missed tackle rate, which was like top of the, you know, the team basically. You know, like for reference, Blake Martinez had 6.5%. Raglan actually had like one of the lowest in the league at 6%, even though he had a high rate in 2018 when he played a lot of snaps. But he did get better at that. Like four of the ten tackles that he missed were against Washington in week 6, and it kind of got covered up by him returning that fumble for a touchdown. And they were pretty bad. Like, they were open field. Like, Tay Crowder should make this tackle. And, you know, Antonio Gibson was breaking him down and beating him. But he also got better as the season went along. Like, do you remember any huge missed tackles as the year went on? So, I mean, this is a guy who had 57 tackles in 8 games next to Blake Martinez, who's the tackle king, who, you know, is top of the league at tackles. And he had 57 in 8 games. Like, that was... like, good production. 3 for a loss, a sack, QB hits. Like, he kind of did a little bit of everything. And he should have had an interception versus the Rams, and they overturned it, which they shouldn't have.
And speaking of Blake Martinez, there were 2 times this year, earlier in the year, and then I guess the second quote was a little bit later in the year, but 2 times where Blake Martinez, who highly coveted free agent, you know, getting paid a lot of money, you know, he's got the C on his shirt. He has some say within the building, and I don't think... you know, I would like to think that Blake Martinez just wouldn't say this to say this, but Blake Martinez was the one that said earlier in the year, I want Tay Crowder to play more. He said that, you know, he said, I told Patrick Graham, I want this guy to play more. And that's, you know, Devontae Downs was a little bit of a veteran. You know, David Mayo, was he here, still hurt? You know, he was still around. And then later in the year, Blake Martinez said about Tay Crowder, this guy actually calms me down. Like, this guy kind of keeps me in check whenever I'm getting, you know, maybe too much. And, you know, Blake Martinez is kind of a similar player where he's very tactful about where he goes and where he places himself. And to hear him talk about Tay Crowder that way, where this guy keeps me grounded, I think that's awesome. And again, I'm talking about how Bobby and I, how we look at this guy. We are forgetting where he was drafted and how he's Mr. Irrelevant, and what he brought to the team last year was absolutely awesome. And the sky's the limit for him kind of from here.
Yeah, and I'll finish on that. Like, I think something that gets overlooked is that inside linebacker chemistry between 2 guys, especially when they're playing a good amount of reps. And, you know, Tay had 10 tackles twice in 8 games next to Blake Martinez. But, you know, there's a lot of trust there. It's like, you know, and something that we looked at when we were watching Blake Martinez Green Bay film, it's like, man, they left Blake out to dry. They gave him no help with the second inside linebacker. They put a safety who didn't know what he was doing or play the wrong gap or get washed up. Where you could tell Blake had some trust in him, where that he didn't have with Devontae Downs or even David Mayo. And, you know, allows him to take chances. And then Tay the same way. It's like, hey, man, you just play your gap. We got these 3 big D linemen in front of you. I got this on the front side. Don't worry about having the jump gaps. Play your gap, play it fast, and play it aggressive. And even coverages, you know, making under calls when you're running cover three and things like that. So that's why, you know, it wasn't like Tay Crowder had some amazing rookie season, but it's a guy who really probably they didn't plan to play at all at the start of the season with David Mayo and Devontae Downs being ahead of him and being the fourth, maybe even the fifth inside linebacker at one point during camp. And then, you know, then it, and he's so young at that position. So I'm excited to see how he grows in year two.
Yeah. One final point. I want to see him improve in coverage a little bit. I know you touched on it. He's like, yeah, he was all right. I want to see him improve in coverage, especially we talked with Darnay Holmes with just out in space. And when the quarterback's holding the ball for more time and more time, out in space and getting that awareness down, he's a rookie. He's still young playing the position. Hopefully he'll get that down even more. And just we'll end on this. Tay Crowder had some of the biggest moments of last year. The Washington touchdown that sealed that game. And that was the first win of the season, right, Bobby?
Yes.
First win of the season, Tay Crowder sealed it. And then also a huge sack, his first sack of his career, came on like a nice, an unintentional stunt, some might call it, on Russell Wilson on a third down in Seattle, and that was our biggest win of the season. So Tay Crowder had some big moments and some of our biggest wins of the season. So go get him in 2021, Tay.
Excited. All right, see you guys on the next one. Until then, let's go Big Blue.